Wisdom, the final frontier to true knowledge. Welcome to Wisdom Trek, where our mission is to create a legacy of wisdom, to seek out discernment and insights, to boldly grow where few have chosen to grow before. Hello, my friend. I am Guthrie Chamberlain, your captain on our journey to increase wisdom and create a living legacy. Thank you for joining us today as we explore wisdom on our second millennium of podcast. Today is day 1496 of our trek, and it is Worldview Wednesday. Creating a biblical worldview is essential to have a proper perspective on today's current events. To establish a biblical worldview, you must have a proper understanding of God and His Word. This week on our Worldview Wednesday episode, we will continue our study based on a course I recently completed, taught by Dr. Michael S. Heiser. Our study is titled, Sons and Daughters of God, The Believer's Identity, Calling, and Destiny. Throughout this multi-week course, we will demonstrate that, in the Old Testament, sons of God and holy ones refers to supernatural beings whose Father is God and who work with God to carry out His will, and that His divine family was present before humanity. By fully engaging the biblical texts such as Psalm 82, Psalm 89, and Deuteronomy chapter 32 verses 8 and 9, our study will show that this divine family functions as a template for God's human family. God desires of humans, as His imagers, to participate in His counsel. This study addresses issues such as polytheism, the nature of little g gods, and Yahweh's uniqueness. This study will apply insights to the New Testament text and shows how the metaphor of being in God's family informs our sense of identity and mission as believers. Today we're going to cover imaging after the fall and New Testament application. Segment number 26, Imaging After the Fall. If the image of God is about us being representatives of God, the fall and the entrance of evil into the world is certainly a factor in our understanding. Our understanding is that we continue with our purpose. I've met Christians that believe that after the fall, the imaging idea was totally lost. Those Christians surmise that the only people who image God now are Christians or believers because they've been brought back into a relationship with God through redemption. I don't believe that. I think that's an inferior understanding of the text and leads to some dangerous theology. For instance, in Genesis chapter 9 verses 6 and 7, which of course is after the fall and even after the flood, we read this, "If anyone takes human life, that person's life will also be taken by human hands. For God made human beings in His own image. Now be fruitful and multiply and repopulate the earth." This is an obvious reference to Eden with the Edenic commands repeated. The commands that were originally given to Adam and Eve, the original imagers, the idea here is that the death penalty, taking the life of a person, is legitimized somehow. And we're going to find out in the rest of the Torah where that situation might be the case. That idea is legitimized because God cannot tolerate the unlawful, unwarranted taking of any human life, born or unborn. After all, those humans were created in His own image. When you kill a person, that is like killing God in effigy. If the image were linked only to Christians or only believers, then this verse would in effect be saying, well, it's only a crime to kill someone who is a Christian. You can kill other people, and God is not going to care about that, but only if you kill His children, then we're in trouble. And as it sounds, that's absurdity. But this is where some of the thinking goes. We don't want to go there. We want to be consistent with God's Word. The image of God is something that remains intact even after the fall. It's important to God because we are His representation. We are His representatives, every human being at every stage of life. By definition, if you are a human, you are an imager of God. And this is what the biblical mindset is. We don't see that in other Near Eastern religions. This concept is quite different because in ancient Near Eastern thinking about humans, humanity is a collective in other religions, like the Mesopotamian region, even Egyptian religion. In some of these ancient Near Eastern cultures, humanity is never described as having this destiny of being with God or the gods, ruling with them in a positive co-rulership kind of relationship. No, only the king in many of these cultures ever gets referred to as particular God's image. Genesis, of course, specifically in Genesis chapter 1:26, with the whole idea that all humanity images God, widens this concept considerably. Human beings in biblical theology are all equally God's imagers. Not just one person, not just someone with royal blood, but everyone. And from the beginning, it was always God's program to restore our status as imagers. Biblical theology dramatically democratizes the idea. After the fall, we have a problem. We need to bring back the estranged children, humans, back to God's family. They don't lose their image, they don't lose the status of being his representative, but they are in rebellion. So something has to be done about that. After the fall, God's program is to restore Eden, which means restoring his presence on earth, restoring his rule on earth, and the mechanism for doing that is through his people. We know the biblical story. Genesis 3 is just the first in a series of rebellions. In this entire course, we focus on the rebellions both in the human and the supernatural world. The Bible covers three rebellions in the first 11 chapters of Genesis. Genesis 3, the fall of humanity. Genesis 6, the corruption with supernatural entities. And Genesis 11, the Tower of Babel event. After that, we have the whole problem with Israel and the wilderness wanderings. We have the period of judges. We have a divided monarchy, idolatry. It's a long, long road, a long, long story of rebellion. At each phase of this, though, God is trying to restore Eden. So that shifts our thinking to the role of Israel and the Messiah. When we get to the Israelites, this is probably the most straightforward example to see. God has called out for himself, from nothing, a new people, the people allotted to him. His own inheritance is Israel after dispersing all the other people into nations, assigning them to lesser gods that we talked about earlier. Here the story takes one people group that God creates out of nothing miraculously through Abraham and Sarah to reinstall what was lost in Eden. He's going to dwell with them. They're going to occupy a specific place. There's going to be eventually altars, tabernacles, and temples. God is going to live there. They will be his people. Back in Genesis 12, God told Abraham that it's through your seed that all of the nations will be blessed. They will be brought back into relationship. It takes a long time for this to work out, and ultimately, it only works out because of the Messiah, because God himself becomes a man to ratify and fulfill all of his covenants to bring all of this about. So the biblical story here, as it relates to the human imager issue, is that God is committed to working with people, with humans, and it's a long, arduous task. They have been redeemed. Nations have been reunited. Sin and rebellion must be rolled back. The kingdom has to be restored to earth. It's a long, terrible, and also glorious process. This is the biblical story, the biblical epic of how this is happening. The Messiah is the key, the linchpin here. He is both human and divine. He has an atoning death that fixes the problem of Genesis chapter 3. We have the resurrection that ultimately fixes the problem of sinful flesh, getting new bodies, the reclaiming of the nations because of the resurrection. In Paul's thinking, it is also the key to defeat the principalities and powers. All of these things are interconnected and equally important. They all roll around, revolve around, God's commitment to using people and not exempting them or destroying them. Humanity's freedom means that there is no plan B. Now think about it. God made humanity his imager. They sin. They use one of the attributes that he shared with them, the freedom of choice, to rebel. God is omniscient. He knows this is going to happen, but he allows it to happen. Why? Because he hasn't created us as robots. Without the attribute like freedom, without God sharing his characteristic with us, we wouldn't represent him. The fact that freedom is one of those attributes mean, again, that without it, if we weren't free, in some sense, to make the decisions to obey or not, we wouldn't be like him. We couldn't be spoken of as his imager because he is not a robot. He is free. So God is willing to work with humanity in this way. We can say to take this risk. With God, it's not a risk because he knows the end from the beginning. But this is the biblical story. There is no plan B. God is committed to humanity, to making humanity an intimate, participatory part of everything He wants to do on this planet. There is no plan B. That is why we have evil, and why evil ultimately is going to be redeemed, because God is committed to it. So we are His imagers. We are His means of turning evil into good. We are His means of restoring Eden. We have a status as His family members. We are His children. We really want to see humanity's genuine role. If we are estranged from God, we need to go back to the right relationship again through the work of Christ. And as we do, we can see why we are here, why we are members of His family. We are able to see that this was God's original desire, and it should be normal. Once we get that realization, we can have a sense that we have just not a contrived, pretend, artificial role in accomplishing God's will as though everything was pre-programmed. It's not. Our role is genuine, and God is committed to making us part of what He wants us to do. All of these thoughts are present in the New Testament, but they are derived from materials that we've been talking about. Our status as family members, the concept of imaging, it gives us status, a calling, and ultimately, a destiny. And that will take us into segment 27, as over the next several weeks, we get the New Testament application of these ideas. We have covered a lot of ground in the Old Testament about the sons of God, this divine family language that runs across the Old Testament and how humans were included in that family. We went to Genesis 1 for that, and that also took us to the matter of the image of God. We talked about how the plural and singular language interplay in Genesis chapter 1 verses 26 and 27, sort of fused or united, or at least created a strong association between God and His heavenly family and His earthly family, and that is why it was intentional. It was really about imaging God. Both God's divine family and God's human family, of course, have the same creator, the same Father, as it were. And that Father tasked us and tasked them in specific ways in their spheres of influence, the spiritual world or the physical world. But the New Testament introduces Christ as the ultimate imager of God. We want to transition now on how the New Testament repurposes this kind of language. We're going to talk about Jesus, how He is cast as the ultimate imager of God. Remember that we talked about the image being really kind of a verbal idea than a thing that is put in a person or a quality. It's a status, and a status of representing God. Well, Jesus is the ultimate example of that, and there are New Testament passages that testify to this fact and help solidify our understanding of what imaging really means. We want to introduce New Testament vocabulary regarding believers, and we're going to do this by looking at New Testament vocabulary for believers as children of God. Some passages will be familiar, some may not be so familiar. Over the next few weeks, we'll learn how the children of God need to be conformed to the image of the ultimate imager, conformed to the image of Christ. He is our model for how we represent God as family members and really as His siblings. We're going to be talking about glorification as well. Glorification is the end point of sanctification. We typically talk about the word sanctification, that is, being made divine. It is being made like Jesus and, of course, being made like a spiritual being, a spiritual family member, but still being embodied. Jesus, even after His resurrection, gets a body. And as we learn in 1 Corinthians chapter 15, our post-resurrection will be like the body that Jesus had after His resurrection. And to summarize for today, this is all intentional to put us in the same group with Him as family members, which is the way that it was intended to be. Had there never been a fall, that is what we would have been looking like, sort of a jet start, a jump on glorification, solidifying our status as people, embodied beings, humans that belong to God's family, in His direct presence. Of course, we have had this long interval, the biblical story, about how things were fixed after all, how God never gave up on His plan. Ultimately, of course, we're going to re-inherit all of this as believers, working our way back to Eden, moving into the past, as it were. We'll discuss a little bit of our inheritance in the new Eden that brings all of this together. So that's where we're heading in the rest of this course, building on this language, these concepts that we've seen in the Old Testament. And that will finish our study for this week's Worldview Wednesday. Next week, we will cover believers as family, participants. But tomorrow we'll enjoy a 3-minute humor nugget that will provide you with a bit of cheer, which will help you to lighten up and live a rich and satisfying life. So encourage your friends and family to join us and to come along with us tomorrow for another day of Wisdom Trek, Creating a Legacy. If you'd like to listen to any of the past 1,495 treks or read the Wisdom Journals, they are all available at wisdom-trek.com. And I encourage you to subscribe to Wisdom Trek on your favorite podcast player so that each day's trek will be downloaded to you automatically. And thank you so much for allowing me to be your guide, your mentor, but most importantly, I am your friend as I serve you through the Wisdom Trek podcast and journal each day. And as we take this trek of life together, let us always live abundantly, love unconditionally, listen intentionally, learn continuously, lend to others generously, lead with integrity, and leave a living legacy each day. I am Guthrie Chamberlain, reminding you to keep moving forward. Enjoy your journey and create a great day every day. See you tomorrow.